Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined as always by top London radio DJ and certified Japanophile, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how are you doing?
Pete Donaldson is back for the Abroad Japan podcast episode, I don't know what, but thank you, Chris, for letting me on the show once again.
You're in.
Welcome. I'm in.
And what a week it is, Pete. Do you know why it's a good week?
You've got some new shoes.
Even better than that, Pete.
You've bought a new hammer.
Even better than that, Pete.
Have you reached 1 million subscribers on YouTube?
Yay! You bet I have.
That's amazing.
Well done to, I know. It feels like a collective effort. I feel like it's a kind of a joint celebration. Everyone who's subscribed to the channel, everyone who's been following, everyone seems to have kind of shared in the excitement of hitting 1 million subscribers. So to everyone listening, to everyone who watches the channel, thank you for being a part of the Abroad Japan channel the last few years. It's also it's kind of like three celebrations in one, actually, because not only did we get 1 million subscribers, but we also hit 100 million views, which is quite a nice, exciting number. And it's also my 6-year anniversary in Japan as well. So three kind of good things at once. So I'm in a good mood this month. This is a good month.
It all comes round. Isn't that the Ice Cube song? This was a good day. Today was a good day. I'm not a big Ice Cube fan, but I believe he's got a song called Today Was a Good Day. And then someone went back and figured out through all of the things he said which day it was. And I think it was in February in, I don't know, 1998 or something. Weird like that.
I've absolutely no idea what that is. We're going to have to...
But Chris, I'm so pleased that you reached 1 million. I mean, basically, that basically says that 1 million people want to see your face every week or every time you put out a video, which, I can't even get my family to look at my face. My family don't even want me visiting.
Well, Well, I mean, I can't really believe it either. It's kind of scary as well. When you visualise 1 million people, that's like, oh.
Picture
I've actually
naked.
Found as the years have gone by, the years I've done this, it's become more difficult because you start to dwell on the viewing figures and you think, oh my God, that's a lot of people. If I say something wrong, it could all go downhill very quickly. So, yeah, it's kind of scary. It's got scarier as the years gone by. And now it's at the peak scariness level. But, yeah, it's also very exciting as well, especially with the upcoming cycle. It'll be cool to do that with a million people watching, or a million subscribers.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the time to collapse with heat exhaustion. 1 minute. At least he reached a million subscribers before he died. You're getting a lot of emails from people, worried people and concerned people. I watched your
getting
Patreon
so many,
video.
Yeah.
I watched your Patreon video because I am a Patreon subscriber, and it's very important to chuck Chris a couple of coins, because otherwise, how is he going to do the things he needs to do? He's always dropping lenses. Well, he's very clumsy.
Thanks, Pete. I have been getting a lot of emails from people who are genuinely concerned about all this. And it's started to worry me as well. It makes me think, oh my God, what have I done here? Yeah, I've actually got a bit more nervous. I still haven't got a bike either.
Yeah.
Is that bad?
I mean, it's not good. It's not
bad. Not a good thing. But I am getting one on Saturday. So
right.
From then on, the game will change and I'll have like a month and a half, and I'll be cycling like every day for a month and a half to try and prepare myself. But I don't think, I don't know, I'm not gonna keep talking about it for now, because I'll probably just dig myself a hole and make myself sound all brilliant and mighty, and then day three of the bloody cycle on YouTube, I'll collapse into a puddle on the floor and that'll be the end. So, got to be careful what I say. Could come back and haunt me later on.
We're trying to organise where you're going to be when I arrive in Japan. So it might it could be in seven different places, depending on how the ride's gone thus far. You might be just, you might not want to see visitors. Might be too tired.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like we know where we're going to fit you in, around the back of Japan.
Right.
We're going to drag you to a place called Fukui, Fukui.
How rude.
A little bit awkwardly spelt, potentially. if all goes well, Pete, we should get you from Fukui to Kyoto. I think that'd be quite a nice romantic. Originally, we were going to get you in at the end of the cycle at Kagoshima, and then I realised that definitely wasn't going to happen. I'm not going to be cycling that fast. So I think this would be nice, though. You've been to Kyoto before, right? So
I've been to Kyoto briefly, yeah. I think you're going to be passing through Himeji as well, which has a beautiful castle.
Yeah, I've never been there.
Yeah,
you've been, right?
Really nice. It's like an Overwatch level. It's beautiful.
I've always wanted to go there because it's in my favourite James Bond movie, You Only Live Twice, the one where he visits Japan. So I feel like a special connection to the castle. So I've never been there, but it's on the hit list.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to that. And it'll be cool to get you over and stick you in a video. I think the people have been wanting to see your face for the longest time.
Well, I'll make sure I'm wearing a lot of makeup then.
Yeah, bring some makeup. And you'll be jet-lagged, because you'll pretty much arrive in Japan, in Tokyo, and then you'll have to switch planes, hop on another flight, come back over the Japanese Alps, land in Fukui, and then cycle for 5 days straight and die.
Well, I don't know. I mean, how does it work with, like, luggage and stuff? How does that work? Am I just going to have
to
have a base?
You don't need luggage.
I'll have to have, like, a base hotel somewhere that just keeps my luggage safe. And then, I mean, where am I going to get a bike? It's all very confusing. I'll just have to get the train.
We'll get you a bike. It'll be fine. We'll get you a little sidecar or a wagon that I can stick you in behind the bicycle.
You should switch to tandem. We'll switch to tandem for a few days.
I did. I was dangerously tempted to do that. A cyclist who cycles around Asia, he's got a bike like that, and he's got a kind of a nice sit-down bike. I don't know what it's actually called. It might be a tandem, but it's one that looks really relaxing. And he just cycles around all of Asia. And he made a video giving me some tips. And I was watching him sit there. It looks like he's just sort of sitting in like an armchair with wheels
on. Oh, yeah. They're
and I
so
thought, why
kind
haven't
of,
I got that?
They always look so hard to manoeuvre, like turn left or turn right. It's very confusing.
I haven't a clue how it works, where you can get one. But I was very tempted. But it looks like we'll be getting a mountain bike. So I've got a mountain bike next week. And yeah, I mean, it was difficult. Road bike, mountain bike, I didn't know the difference. Presumably a road bike is for the road, a mountain bike is for the mountains. But I discovered that road bikes can get punctures easily, which I didn't want. When you're doing 2,000 kilometres,
yeah,
a puncture could be the bane of your life. And then I also found that mountain bikes are more comfortable in general. And again, when you're cycling for 30, 40 days, you need to be able to sit comfortably. So, yes, that's why I went for the mountain bike. Yeah, well, I'm excited. But there is, I don't know how to lead into this next section without sounding ominous, because I was going to say something earlier about treading carefully, because that's what we're going to do for the next rest of the podcast, because we're going to be talking about a serious topic that's dominating headlines in Japan at the moment, all because of one outrageous story that started a few weeks ago. So it turned out one of Japan's biggest, most prestigious medical schools, the Tokyo Medical University, had been fraudulently lowering the scores of female applicants who took the annual entrance exam, keeping up the percentage of... Basically, women that were applying to the university were having their scores artificially lowered.
Right.
Because the school believed that men are more likely to... I'm not sure how to phrase this, really. I think they're concerned that women would have children and whatnot and then leave the job, and they thought that would be to the detriment of the industry, something along those lines. Either way, they've been lowering the test scores of female students for up to the last decade, and it's pretty shocking for a school to do that, for a university of that caliber to do that, to admit to rigging an exam for applicants. It's pretty shocking, especially as the applicants have to spend vast time and resources to even get to that stage. It costs a lot of money and time to get into the Tokyo Medical University, and then to just rig it like that is shocking. What it tells you about the situation of gender equality in Japan is not a good thing either. The only good thing is it sounds a bit like a turning point, this coming to light, and the sort of shock across the country. Have you heard anything about this back over in the UK, Pete?
No, I've not heard a single news story about it, to be honest. And I think it might be a turning point, but I think if we talk about systemic racism and sexism and homophobia, but for a university to systemically, physically actually go to exam results and change them for women compared to men... in a industry that isn't necessarily connected to them, if you know what I mean. You're going to complete the course. They're going to get all of their money. So somewhere, at some point, some people have got together, some men have got together, and said, well, this is the best course of action. If they feel able to do that in 2018, 2017, I think Japan has a whole heap of time before it's in any way regarded as a tipping point, because that is something else, isn't it? Especially as you say, it costs a lot of money to even get into a position where you're taking exams.
Well, Japan is ranked 114th out of 144 countries in the World Economic Forum's national ranking of gender equality.
Wow.
Despite the fact that nearly 50% of Japanese women are college educated, one of the world's highest levels. But they do face a great deal of discrimination in the workforce. Apparently, this started back in 2009 or 2010, when the percentage of women who were passing the entrance exam rose from 24% in 2009 to 38% in 2010. Evidently, this created some sort of panic. It led them to rig the application. It led them to rig the exam results. Apparently, they were taking the women's scores and multiplying them by a coefficient of less than one in order to reduce their scores across the board. And now the figure of... So before, back in 2010, it was 38% of women who passed the entrance exam. This year, that had dropped to just 18% as a result of this methodology, this terrible kind of thing that the university had instigated. So... Yeah, but it's caused a lot of outrage, as you'd expect. People are shocked by it. I saw some interviews on TV, and people were sort of saying, this doesn't even sound real. It sounds like a film or something. It sounds like a political thriller. And it doesn't bode well for Shinzo Abe, the Prime Minister of the country, who's been trying to increase the number of women in the workplace and kind of switch around kind of a culture that... has pervaded Japanese society for the longest time now.
It's ridiculous. B, with the massive caveat that we are two white men in a room talking about these issues, maybe we should have women on the podcast. But I mean, I think fundamentally just sorting out a podcast with me and you is hard enough right now. But yeah, it's grotesque. And I think if I was going to pin the blame on anything or any one sort of situation, possibly immigration has a thing to do with it as well. They're an island nation, as we always say on the podcast. And outside influences coming in, sort of going, sorry, what the hell is going on, means that the Japanese aren't really aware of best practice elsewhere in the world. But, I mean, like you say, 114 out of 144, it's a disgrace. It's an absolute disgrace. Mm. Bearing in mind that, like, I think it was a year ago, in the Japanese parliament, a woman was outwardly criticised by a male colleague, a male senator, a male politician, for not having children, which is just, you know, because they were talking about the issue of population dwindling. And what a disgrace. What an absolute disgraceful part of Japanese society that is going on.
I mean, it's still a very conservative culture, conservative country politically. I mean, even in the Prime Minister's kind of cabinet, there's only, I think, two out of the 24 people in his cabinet, only two of them are women. Mm. There is definitely light at the end of the tunnel. We've got a few stories of recent that are kind of uplifting. I mean, the first major thing in recent years, the mayor of Tokyo, Yuriko Koike, has become a kind of a beacon of hope for women leadership for women in Japan. She's kind of set up a new political party to rival Shinzo Abe in his Liberal Democratic Party. I can't remember what the name of the party's called. It's called the Party of Hope or something. Mm. Sounds nice. I think it's literally just called the Party of Hope. and she's trying... That's a great name for a party. Kind of, why do we always have such boring, serious-sounding names for political parties? If I had a political party, it'd be called the Happy Fun Party or the Super Magic Wizard Party or something.
Monster Rave. Well, we've got the Monster Raving Loony Party, but they never get in, do they? So...
Probably a good thing.
Yeah,
the Monster Raving Loony Party in the UK. What were even their policies?
I can't remember what they were in like the 80s when it was their heyday, but I think wasn't Lord Buckethead a part of the Monster Raving Loony Party? He was quite good.
I think he was.
I quite liked him in the last election. I think he would. I think he would probably do a good job, better job than anyone we've got at the moment.
Can you imagine if they got in though? What would happen?
Well, to be honest, all of his speeches seemed a lot more sensible. Were surprisingly coherent. Yeah, that's what I'd probably go for. Surprisingly coherent.
I mean, that's not the... So we've also got... In the same week this kind of happened, Japan had its first female pilot. That was kind of a bit of good news to contrast such a horrible story. First Lieutenant Misa Matsushima, 26, for the Japanese Air Self-Defense Force, and officially named a fighter pilot this month. Apparently, women only account for a mere 6.4% of Japan's 228,000 troops, and they're trying to increase that to 9% by 2030. But that's kind of cool. Apparently, she was inspired by Top Gun, and that led her to want to become a fighter pilot back in 2015 when they changed the rules allowing women to become fighter pilots.
It is one of the hardest jobs to get into, just physically, because just eyesight wise, you know what I mean? Just you have to have so many physical attributes that do not lend themselves to being a human. You have to be so good.
Could you be a fighter pilot, Pete?
No, I couldn't because I wear spectacles. But even like people who I've known like for a little while who tried to get into that that side of things, they could not do it. They could not pass the entry exam for like reaction times and things like that. It's incredible, really.
Couldn't you become the first spectacled pilot in the world ever?
Maybe the first inept pilot. The first inept pilot to fly a big MiG. I don't know what our planes are called. I'm not a plane guy. Is MiG a thing or is that Russian? I don't know.
That's a Russian. That's
is that
a
Russian
plane?
One? Right, okay.
Yes. Euro TIE Fighter.
A Euro TIE Fighter?
Euro TIE Fighter Typhoon.
Typhoon, there we go, yeah.
F-35. Don't get me started. I love my fighter.
Love a fighter.
I just love the image of you flying a flipping F-35 fighter plane and just flying it the wrong way around because you can't see what you're doing.
Just
missiles going all over the place. You on the radio.
You're right. It sounds brilliant, Chris. I think it should happen, definitely.
Hold up.
What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
And to my surprise, I stumbled across a secret, sexy club.
Wow.
The same week as well, actually, I saw another article about a female sushi chef. Kind of went viral.
Okay.
There's a sushi restaurant in Akihabara that's opened up called Nadeshiko Sushi. Mm. I didn't realise this until I watched the video, but even though it's fairly obvious, the sushi industry in Japan is completely male-dominated. Mm. There are ridiculous, long-held beliefs that women can't make sushi. And there's three reasons that you often hear. The first one is because of menstruation cycles. Apparently it affects women's sense of taste, which... There have been some scientific reports on that, but it's not a good enough excuse.
No, otherwise, it really isn't, because it's bullshit.
That's ridiculous. And then there's their makeup might affect their ability to smell as well.
Where do men think that women put their makeup? Their nostrils? Is that how?
I know.
And then, you don't smell through your pores.
My personal favourite. There's a belief that women's hands are too warm to make sushi. Which is ridiculous. I mean, there's even some studies that show that women's hands are 2.8 Celsius lower 2.8 degrees Celsius lower than men's fans. So, it seems like a load of rubbish.
This kind of this gatekeeping has a long and torturous history, and it doesn't seem to be getting any better that quickly. But then, you know, if women can set up businesses, you know, I mean, good on the woman to show the men that that's absolute fucking bullshit. If you excuse my language, there's a series 2 of Atlanta. It's a really good TV show. It's Charles Gambino, Donald Glover, written, directed, and performed. The crescendo to the whole series is basically him being told by his friend and I think cousin, the rapper Paperboy, in this TV show, black people have to be twice as good to be regarded as having parity with the rest of the world, with the rest of white people, effectively. And it's this again, really, isn't it? Right, women have to be twice as good to be regarded as being on the level. So this sushi chef will be the best of the best. She'll be producing some incredible work, and she's only regarded as being having parity with some of the best sushi chefs in Japan. And it's just, it must be exhausting. Like, it just must be just exhausting.
It must take a lot to go up against that, you know. I mean, she trained with a male sushi chef. You know, he taught her everything. But she's set up this place in Akihabara. Her name's Yuki Chizui. And she claims to be Japan's first and only all-female sushi restaurant. So apparently all the staff are female. So I suppose some people hit back and say, oh, no, but then you've gone to the opposite end of the spectrum. You've gone to the extreme. But regardless, she's trying to turn the tide and show that women can make great sushi as well, regardless of their makeup and having warm hands, which is absolute rubbish. And there's a nice quote from her. She says that, I hope that someday it's not male sushi chef or female sushi chef, just sushi chef. You know, that's a good point. Why do we have to discriminate? But
sushi chef is such a kind of exotic thing anyway. I think seeing a male sushi chef sounds fucking mental anyway. Oh, it's a male, he's a male, it's a male sushi chef, is it? I mean, just say sushi chef, to be honest.
Is it not a tongue twister in itself?
Yeah, exactly.
Saying
and like, all right, female pilot. I mean, that's not a well trodden path. Let's say female fighter pilot probably isn't as well trodden, but female sushi chef. It's just someone who slams some rice into their hand and then puts a bit of fish on top. I mean, I understand the craft and I understand the importance of getting it right.
How dare you degrade the fine art of sushi?
But, you know,
and with your simplistic,
I'm not a great food fetishist. I don't like the, because you get this a lot. You get a lot of foodie stuff in Britain, and there's been this explosion. Every second TV show, the decadence of the fucking West. If I visited the West from, you know, somewhere that wasn't quite so moneyed and just saw all of the television shows just about food and fat people just shoving their middle-class fat white people just shoving bread in their mouths and going, nom, 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 you really taste the sugar, nom, nom, nom. It's just, I find the whole fetishization of food grotesque at the best of times, and I will give it no truck.
We've touched a nerve with Pete Donaldson.
I get very wound up.
We know how to set
Don't get me started on craft ale.
I have a challenge for you, though. Can you say female sushi chef 3 times really fast? Because I'll be damned if I can.
Female sushi chef, female sushi... No, I can't. Sushi, it's a sushi chef. Sushi chef.
It's really hard.
Sous vid, sushi chef.
When I said male sushi chef or female sushi chef, that felt like my mouth nearly broke. Just saying that.
Get some sushi
in it. I love the way this has gone from trying to be a serious gender debate to just me doing tongue twisters with the phrase female sushi chef.
Chris, you may
I should have,
have
expected it to happen.
You may have a million subscribers, Chris, but you still can't be trusted.
This is the key to my success.
Exactly.
Twisters.
Exactly.
Simplistic tongue twisters. But I don't know. I mean, I think things will get better for Japan. It's still not there yet at all. But it's on the right track, generally, I feel. And with the Tokyo mayor, I can never recall her name off the top of my head, Yuriko Koike, there's talk of her becoming the prime minister in the near future, especially if her party of hope should come to power, and that would be a pretty big deal. I mean, it's already a big deal that she's the mayor in the first place, and at one point she was the country's first ever female defence minister. Mm. Although when I brought her up with a friend of mine, who's a pretty cool businesswoman, quite entrepreneurial woman, Japanese woman as well, I was talking about the mayor. I was talking about Yuriko Koike, and she sort of looked really scared by Yuriko. I don't know. I think she's quite a scary figure as well. Quite a fiery,
well,
scary figure.
That's the certainly thing. I mean, we can go into gender politics out there for until the cows come home, because it's a long and heavy subject. But women consistently find themselves in a situation where they have to adopt male characteristics to get ahead, or not even get ahead, just to you know, tread water effectively in a man's world. I think it just comes down to immigration. Like, Japan just aren't aware of how enriching it is to have something approaching a 50-50 split. It's not happening anywhere in the world. Let's make that very clear. There's just quite simply not enough female politicians in politics all around the world. Europe's sort of leading the way a little bit with that. If you look at the Scandinavian nations, they've certainly made more waves. Obviously, Angela Merkel is probably certainly one of the greatest politicians of the 21st century, and I think that'll will out in the future. Theresa May, less so. Margaret Thatcher, even less so.
Don't put them in the same, let's not the put same them, pedestal.
And I would never put them in the same bracket, but it's getting to the point where if you've never had a female leader in Europe, I think you're kind of sticking out like a sore thumb, I think, and that will only improve in the future. But still a hell of a long way to go for everything. And then that's before you get to people of colour and people of other minorities, like the trans community and stuff like that. I think there's a trans mayor maybe coming in somewhere in America fairly soon, who will be the first trans mayor ever, I think, in American history, which is huge. And it's in quite a red state as well, which is interesting. But yeah, it's moving, but probably not as quickly as it should be.
But I mean, this is something that they kind of need to deal with soon, given the low fertility rate, given the population's dropping off a cliff at an unprecedented rate. One of the main reasons is women basically have to choose between having a career or having children. Roughly, you know, 70% of Japanese women quit working after they give birth to their first child, which is in the US, for example, that's only about 30% in comparison, 33%. And when women do return to work in Japan after they've had children, often their career path is suspended or have been demoted to lower positions. Again, encouraging signs. In 2016, the percentage of women in the job market in Japan exceeded the US for the first time, 67%. However, that's nearly half of those women were employed part-time or on a contract basis with low pay, little responsibility, and few chances to advance their careers. So, but it is something they need to address. If they want to get the fertility rate going back up, turning around, they have to do something kind of quick and make women feel a lot more welcome in the workplace, especially if they've had children. And they need to stop rigging university exam entrance things.
That would be a good start, wouldn't it?
The fundamental foundations of success.
Christ. I mean, I can't imagine. If you're a woman, you're sitting in a meeting with a manager, a male manager, I can't imagine the things that you get asked that you would not dream of asking of a male colleague, of a male employee.
Well, typically you have to send a photo in. I don't know. Do we have that in the UK? We have to send a photo in for a job?
No. I'm almost certain that would be... That would be massively frowned upon, just by virtue of the fact that
deal breaker for Pete.
You can't do that. They've done studies where if you've got a name that isn't British sounding, you're automatically, even just subconsciously, on the scrap heap. It's a fascinating area, but I mean, I don't really feel quite qualified to discuss it, even though we're having a crack. It's all very depressing, but all you can do is just. Speak up, can't you? You can only just speak up for the truths. Speak truth to power and all that.
I feel like we've had to tread lightly around this subject. Not because, I mean, it's a twofold. Because A, I don't feel experienced enough to discuss this topic. As a guy living and working in Japan, I've had a pretty easy ride. I do know it's more difficult for women here. I can't speak from personal experience. Things I can't speak from personally.
Well, exactly. I mean, at the end of the day, you're not only a guy, you're a gaijin. So, like, you're probably not going to be privy to a lot of the struggles and pressures and situations that even male colleagues find themselves in.
Yeah, it's not a topic I feel like I can add much more to than that.
Well, there were some news stories in the papers, and it's probably quite an interesting subject to deal with one week, I think.
It's a mixed bag, isn't it?
Mm.
We've got a terrible story there with the Tokyo Medical University, but also stories of hope.
Yeah, hugely.
With the pilot, with Yuki Chizue in a sushi restaurant. If you do want to visit the sushi restaurant, it's in Akihabara. And again, it's called Nadeshiko Sushi. But if you just look up Yuki Chizui, you should be able to find it. Or just all-female sushi restaurant. Go in, have a look, give it a shot. I haven't been in there. I don't know if I would go in just by the fact that it's all run by female staff. But certainly if I'm in the area, I'd give it a shot. Apparently the review's all right, so that's cool. Yes. But not for now. Let's dive into some questions, Mr. Donaldson. What have we got?
Why do you not want to go in because there's loads of female staff? I'm confused.
Oh, no, I meant like, oh, God, here we go. Set myself up. I mean, like, I wouldn't go in especially because they're all female.
So. Oh, right, okay, you wouldn't, right, okay, yeah, you wouldn't, yeah. But...
Why, did I say it the other way
you
around?
You sound like I wouldn't go in.
There'd be
women
everywhere.
Their hands are too warm.
His hands are too warm.
The towel I get given by the waiter will be hotter than usual. It'll be horrible.
What I meant was I wouldn't go out my way to go in there just for the fact that it is all okay, right? Yeah, stuff, you know, I wouldn't make a special effort to go there.
Of action, mate. Get
but if I'm in Akihabara and I want some sushi, yeah, I'd probably drop in.
Yeah.
Why not?
I might pop in when I'm over there.
It would be quite weird to see. It would be quite odd, you know. Until I saw that video and until I learned about this, I never really dawned on me that. You don't see many female staff working in sushi restaurants. If they do work, it's usually on something simple like handling the rice. You don't actually see them preparing the fish and putting it on top of the rice and whatnot. So, yeah, I didn't realise that. And so maybe it would be quite weird going in there and all the staff being female. I think it'd be quite cool as well.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll go in there when you're over. If we survive the cycle.
Eat another sushi. I'll probably need the ballast after that. You are with the cycle, you said you are going to be kind of slowing it down a little bit, as in you're going to spend a couple of days in each area to sort of like feel it out, because you've not been to some of the areas that you're kind of travelling through, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, the first place where I meet you in Fukui, I've never been there.
Yeah.
And I don't know what there is there, but apparently it's quite nice.
Yeah.
And Kanazawa as well, supposed to be a very... beautiful place around the back of Japan.
Mm.
I say the back of Japan, I mean kind of the other side of the Japanese Alps compared to Tokyo. I've never been around there much, and I've always wanted to go there, so I'm really excited about that.
Mm.
And as well as needing some rest, right, in between the days of cycling, I thought it'd be just a good way to see the cities. I mean, it'd be a terrible shame to go through somewhere like Kanazawa or Kyoto and not get to spend a day or two exploring the city, you know. I'd be really annoyed if I just sort of raced through it. This isn't a race. It's kind of a trip of discovery. So I want some sort of adventurous discovery rather than a race across Japan. So, yeah, I think it'll be fun. We can uncover something in Fukui.
Exciting.
Sounds quite sinister, but we can have a cracking time.
So we've got some emails this week, Chris Broad, and we should probably read them out, I suppose, because that's kind of how emails work, I guess.
Straight from the fax machine.
Yes.
Our first one is from Adam. He says, "Hi Pete and Chris, my name is Adam and I live in Australia and I listen to all your podcasts on the bus to school on a Thursday morning." Awesome. I love that. Thanks, Adam. I like it when people sending in questions kind of paint a nice picture of where they are and how they listen to the podcast. If you do send in your comments and questions, please do that. Mm. It's quite nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like a little bonus. Anyway.
Definitely.
Adam says, "Love your videos in the podcast. My question is, what was the most memorable moment, any moment you've had in Japan?" From Adam. Pete, you can start there, because I've got to think of something quick.
It was probably, I mean, I guess apart from like the first day when I'm walking around going, "What is this place? It's insane." I had a tattoo done once in a man's house. It was kind of memorable. And then I drank loads of sweet corn soup from the vending machines and couldn't go out that night because I'd overdone it, let's say. That's
what a great memory.
I think Kufor. Is it Kufor? Kufor. Kofu. Yeah, Kofu. Just past Mount Fuji. I got on the wrong train. I went to go and see FC Tokyo play football. I got on the wrong train and ended up in a completely different city. Luckily, though, they had a Japanese football team, so I could watch them play instead. And it was a much better place to watch football rather than FC Tokyo. They won 2-0. And I saw a guy called Ronaldo score. He's just a Brazilian journeyman footballer who was called Ronaldo.
The Ronaldo?
Or the other Ronaldo. the Brazilian or the Portuguese one. But it was. I remember sort of just finding my way into this part of Japan, and I'd never been there before, and I didn't make any plans to do so, and I'd muffed up my trip massively. I just got on the wrong train, and instead of taking 20 minutes to go and see FC Tokyo, it took 2 hours to get to Kufu.
That's a nice story, though. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that you kind of got lost and things worked out nicely. You had a bit of an
adventure. You can do that a lot, can't you? And I think also, the first couple of days in Hakata with you, I think would probably be up there as well, because again, such a sleepy place.
Nice safe option, isn't it?
Just
stay with me.
Yeah,
holiday.
Definitely.
Of course, that was the best memory you've had in Japan.
Look at a couple of mummies. Meeting Natsuki, that was a big one. And looking at some mummies with my trousers burst, with my pants on show.
You what?
Remember, my trousers broke because I fell off that wheelie.
So we were sitting there in front of 200-year-old sacred mummies, gods in their own right, and you were sitting there with your trousers burst open. How do I not remember that?
It's pretty sexy, wasn't it?
What a horrible sight.
I'd fallen off what they call hoverboard. You took me to your mate's gaff, who was like a entrepreneur. And he had this big kind of startup.
Yuki.
Yeah, Yuki. What a dude. He took us for sushi. Probably the best sushi I've ever eaten in my life, to be quite frank.
Although I remember you were hesitant to eat it because you saw them making it with their hands and you felt weirded out.
Again, you don't see that a lot in London. I think it's the first time I've ever seen a sushi chef get them rice out of the bowl and then sort of smack it into his hand and then put it down, and it's all very weird.
It's quite theatrical, but I guess if you don't like people touching your food, sushi could be a bit of
male or female.
Not fun to watch.
Don't touch my food. Use a fork.
It was a man.
Big man.
And his hands were not that warm. for me, my most memorable moment, you know what? It's probably when I was making my third video, plug one of my own videos, a video called Driving in Japan. I ended up driving into the countryside, really deep into the mountains. I got lost, actually. I didn't know where I was. My iPhone died of battery. Seems to happen all the time.
It died of battery.
And I remember just being kind of really profoundly moved. I'd been living in Japan for about 1 month at that point. And I just got my car for a week. And I was just going off and discovering it properly for the first time. And I remember just driving out into the middle of nowhere, surrounded by mountains and streams, watching these kind of really elderly people just harvest the rice and tend to their fields, which are a beautiful shade of green and yellow. And it's so picturesque and beautiful. And I got out of the car and I sort of stood there, watched the smoke rising off a fire that they were burning on the field, listened to the stream and looked around at the mountains and just felt like, wow, this is it. I'm somewhere a long way from home. This is amazing. This is something special. And I felt really emotional, and I don't feel emotional ever about anything, really. So I remember that quite vividly, feeling like, wow, this is awesome. And feeling kind of like sad that I couldn't share that moment with anyone, just standing there in that very tranquil place in a very new alien country for me at the time. I was still culture shocked. I still didn't know what was going on. But I just remember standing there thinking, wow, this is it. I'm bloody happy I've ended up here. And that's my favourite moment. Yeah. I remember it very clearly.
There's nothing quite so
peaceful,
is there?
Even though it was 6 years ago now.
Yeah,
it's beautiful out there.
We've got a question from Jared.
Yeah, I'll let you read it.
hello, Chris and Pete. It's not actually on my email, I think. There was a problem loading my page, apparently. Hello, Chris and Pete. My wife and I were hoping to visit Japan sometime in the next 2 or 3 years, and I was wondering what your thoughts were on the upcoming Olympics and how that might affect the trip. We're shooting for the fall in 2 years, which would only be a couple of months after the Olympics were over. Not sure if prices would be higher or places would be more crowded leading up to the Olympics or after. It must be before, surely?
Well, what I'll say to anybody coming over for the Olympics, if you are thinking of coming over, book your accommodation like a year in advance, because I don't think Tokyo has the capacity for all the people that are going to be coming, especially all the people across Japan who are going to descend upon Tokyo for the event. I would book your accommodation like at least six months in advance.
Yeah.
If you want to stand a chance of getting somewhere, and prices will be going up quite a bit.
Yeah.
So take that into consideration. For me personally, I don't know where I'll be at that point. I'll be in Sendai. I might even be living in Tokyo for all I know. But I'm going to hide underneath a duvet for the whole of the Olympics and just not do anything, because Tokyo is going to be absolutely mental.
Yeah.
I might even leave Japan and get away from it. We'll see. Or who knows, maybe I'll be a correspondent covering the event. I mean, I'm not a very sporty person. I've never been that big on the Olympics. I missed the London Olympics by one day because I was flying to Japan straight after the opening ceremony.
Right.
So I missed that one. I'm going to miss the one where they come here probably, because I'm going to escape to an island, because I just won't be able to handle it. It's going to be mental.
I mean, I was here for the London Olympics, and I was doing live, they were doing big screenings basically in Hyde Park. So, you know, you were talking like 80,000, 90,000 people in one place just watching Jessica Ennis-Hill running around. And I was doing like the stage announcements. So I was interviewing like the swimmers and the boxers and stuff.
Oh, wow.
And I can't remember any of their names. Adlington, is that the swimmer?
Rebecca Adlington.
Yeah, I think she's a swimmer, isn't she? Or have I got that massively wrong? Either way, I was interviewing all of the Olympians with their medals and stuff on stage.
Mm.
And there was one point where they had bands on as well. I think it was Temper Trap were playing. And basically they were showing the video of Jessica Ennis-Hill doing her race, and It was a photo finish or something. Basically, it got to the end. It ran to the end. And the stage manager said, "You need to go out now." And I was going, "The race isn't finished yet. It's a photo finish. We don't know who's won." And so I get pushed out on stage. They cut the screens. So everybody starts booing. And I've got to go, "Ladies and gentlemen, sorry about that. Here's Temper Trap." And I was booed by, you know, good 60,000, 70,000 people in Hyde Park.
No way. Is there a video of that? Because I need to see that.
No, I don't think this is a video of that. There's a bit, but damn. What made me laugh was the drummer from Dodgy. I don't know whether you remember that band Dodgy, staying out for the summer. Afterwards, he went, "Hey, Pete, yeah. I saw you getting booed on the stage. I was booing as well. It was well funny." I was like, "Thanks, drummer from Dodgy.
Oh my God.
You're the best." I needed a drink after that.
Booed by 60,000 people.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Bloody hell.
Oh, yeah,
that is a CV worthy event.
Never mind.
You've got to have that on there.
Never mind.
Booed by 60,000. but yeah, no, I mean, going back to Japan and the Olympics, all I'll say is just book things long in advance, and I'd honestly avoid Tokyo around then, unless you are coming especially for the Olympics. I would stay clear away. We've got one last... It's not a question, it's a comment. And it relates to something from, I think, two podcasts ago.
Right.
I brought up Pitbull. I don't know why this... What is he? Would you consider him a rapper? Or is he just a hip-hop
Yeah, I'd
singer?
Say he's a kind of rapper, know. Yeah. He doesn't ever sing. I know that much.
I mean, his rapping isn't that good either, really, is it? Anyway, we speculated as to why he was called Mr. Worldwide. Danielle from Miami says, "Hey, Chris and Pete, so this is what I've heard living in Miami, which is, for better or worse, where Pitbull originated.
Yeah.
His nickname here was Mr. 305, which is our area code for Florida, for Miami.
Right.
And then when he became big time, he became Mr. Worldwide, as
in
he
the
became
worldwide.
More popular everywhere else.
Ah.
So I guess it was just a modification of a previous nickname, and now he is Mr. Worldwide. I'm glad we've sorted that out. What a podcast it's been. Gender equality, Pitbull,
yeah.
Booing by 60,000 people. If you've got a question, ladies and gentlemen, for us next week, do send it in to abroadjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back same time as always next Wednesday or Thursday, depending on what country you're in. But for now, have yourself a great week. Let's get out of here, Pete.
Bye.
ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.